First of all, somebody told you last year, but every year in Beis HaMedrash it becomes all the more important. When you're younger, the emphasis is on the shiur. The shiur is where you learn the information. And the chavrusa time is a time of chazara, of review. I'm old, the Eishta helps with some of the chavrusa and achidish, the flag and akasha. When you're young, the information that you have is what your teacher gives you. As you get older, and you're closer and closer to Beis HaMedrash age, that emphasis has to change. And it's one of the most painful processes in the life of a yeshiva bachar, is that shift from being taught to what they call making a leaning. And the process of learning on your own. And I am not that old, I still remember the struggle of making a leaning, and how frustrating it is every word you have to go and ask. When you sit there with a gemara for 45 minutes and you messed it up so bad, I'm telling you, you missed that. He created a new gemara, was like, "Hoyo, like nivra, ragalek tavavar, izgum and avot." But the Eibishter helps. If you work, you're guided to mitzvah, so you develop those skills. And then as the years in Beis Medrash go along, and you learn how to translate words, and then the Eibishter helps you, you develop a chush in a gemara, in a tesis, in a addition, in a achrim, and so on. And the same is true in chassidus. In your younger years, everything was spoon-fed. You get older, the emphasis shifts. The priority is the chavrusa. And the reason for this is very simple. Because the knowledge that you're going to remember is the knowledge that you worked on, not the knowledge that was handed to you on a golden platter. The knowledge that was handed to you on a golden platter felt good. It was wonderful. But the gears, the brain, didn't work that hard to bring that knowledge in. And as a result, it's not the kind of information that you're going to remember. And certainly that's going to develop your mind. And as a result, the chavrusa becomes very important. To learn on your own it's a different category of learning altogether. Mamas, it is. Kozman, you're sitting in a shir, listening to a lecture, it's nice, and as they say in the Velt, it's kailichdik, it's curvy, it's perfect, but it's not yours. The tail becomes yours when you work for it. And that's why in Beis Medrash, the emphasis shifts from the shir to the chavrusa. The function of the shiur really is parperois. The function of the shiur is not to teach you. The function of the shiur is to enrich the learning you do on your own. And maybe a part of the function of the shiur is to be a motivator, to push you. But it's extremely important that everybody understand that they're here to learn themselves. The shiur is going to help you along, whatever the shiur does. But the ikir kol ha'ikrim, the chavrusa time is more important. Seriously. Obviously, you can come over and ask a pshat and talazachan. But the yagaita, the haravanya that you invest in, learning on your own has no equal, is not comparable to the information that you're going to gain in this year. That's point number one. Point number two, I told this to you last year already. In my yeshiva experience, and I see it a lot, bachrim are held back by the shiur. The bachrim themselves will be learning more, but the Rosh Yeshiva has one more taisvis in that Beis Amad Beis, which he hasn't gotten to yet. And the fact that it's test kislev doesn't matter, he has to say every chiddush and every taisvis that he knows, or that he thinks of, and it literally holds the bracha back. And the official argument is, no, you keep learning. I'm just giving you a shiur in that way. It just doesn't work that way. So what I tried to do, as you saw last year, at least to some extent, is instead of me slowing you down, you rush me up. The way we worked last year was we started a maimed, and I gave shiurim on it. And when most of the bracha finished the maimed, I changed my maimed. Whether I gave my shiurim, or I used up all my index cards, or I didn't use up all my index cards, the people have to move. And to be honest, we didn't learn enough last year, the members. What we're going to do this year is as follows. This is how we're going to start. We'll see later. I may change it. I may even accelerate the pace. Every maimed you have 3 weeks for. And 3 weeks, Abai Sai, means this week, next week, and Aseret Yemei Teshuva. We're going to finish the Nedarim and finish this maimed before Yom Tov. In Shir Gimel, when I taught Shir Gimel, I gave them 2 weeks of maimed. But to Shir Beis, we're going to have 3 weeks of maimed. That means to say, I am not going to learn with you every line of this maimed. There's not enough time. But Bli Neder, in 3 weeks, my shiurim are going to go to the maimed beis, the second maimed. There's going to be, with God's help, 2 shiurim a week. Whatever it is, it could be Monday and Thursday, it could be Sunday and Tuesday, whenever my belly ache is especially pronounced. It'll be 2 shiurim a week. And the shiurim will cover, usually a third of the maimed a week. This week I'm stomach and give you 2 shiurim on aleph and beis, but usually I'll cover more ground. But I want you people to understand, the worst thing, as far as I'm concerned, is you should go slow because you're waiting for me. If the bachrim feel, and don't jump the gun, because then that's going to get harder. Don't come to me in 2 days and say, no, we can do two maimonim in 2 weeks. That is nachyontes. If the boys feel and they see that the majority, I'm not talking about every person, but the majority of the bachim can finish a maimon in 2 weeks, I'm going to change. Because I don't want that my shiur should hold you back. That's not the idea. The shiur is supposed to propel you forward. You have to learn and holler and not waste your time. And let's see how it goes. I mean, let's see how it goes. We'll start off, this is the official how we're going to start off. So there'll be six shiur to be neder per maimon. And if we see that that's more than necessary, in other words, if I'm slowing you down, then we'll change that. And also, obviously, there's some memorim in this hemshech that are very short. There's only one, actually. There is my mother's this hemshech bachar. Huge, like 14 pages. So obviously, we're not going to act dumb about it. Not Kabbalah sale, but for that sake, the important thing that I want to say is the last thing in the world I want is that I should hold you back. That's counterproductive. And obviously, the important thing is what everybody knows. The rikid is, and davzitzen, and davzitzen, and davkumen in zeit, davzitzen, mam sefer, and you have to arvin, teire. There is no alternative. There is no other way this happens. Davzitz no leren teiren. Devisha should help us with atzlach. Harav adaf no lein. Devisha tushik in atzlach. And it's a new year. It's a new beginning. So Devisha helps us that we should all be matzliach and learning, and so on. Okay, now, next point. This is for the bachim who were here last year. You guys learned a couple of hemshechim last year, but the hemshechim that you learned were relatively short. And you remember that the Hemshech Rab Rachye finished. Every question that he asked at the beginning, he answered at the end. The Hemshech Lavi Nechilas Matzah started and didn't have an end. And then the other Hemshech Ravaya Pocket Asada doesn't have an end and you didn't finish it either. So you got a taste of the different types of Hemshech. But this is a long Hemshech. This Hemshech is approximately 80 pages long. It ends on page Kuf Yudalid, which you have to understand that in the middle you have Hecholt. Hecholt starts in the bottom of Nun Gimel and it goes till Pei Aleph, I believe, and Hechotzu is not a part of the Hemshech. So when you'll get to Hechotzu, you'll skip it. At least in the meantime, maybe later we'll go back to it. But the Hemshech is approximately 80 or 85 pages. So this is a long Hemshech. And as I explained to you on previous occasions, let me give you the standard introduction to Hemshechim. Number one, my modem have a very special style. It's not necessarily an unusual style, but it's the style of most my modem. And that is that the maimer sets you up. It introduces you to an idea and asks you questions. The maimer asks you questions, doesn't give you answers. It says, oh, you want to have answers to these questions? We've got to change the subject. And they go on to something else, and they ask you more questions. And then the maimer says, oh, you want the answer to these questions? Got to go to a different topic. And they ask you more questions. This is how the maimer builds. There is the very initial questions in the maimer that as a rule, usually, to explain these questions, you got to ask more questions. And depending on how involved he wants to get, you can have two layers or three layers or four layers of questions. And the rule, of course, is the questions that he raises first, he answers last, which can drive a normal person crazy. Right? Yes, questions, answer. But that's not how the maimer functions. The maimer assumes that the answers that he's going to give you require all this hachana, all this preparation, and therefore the stuff that the Rebbe begins with is always left for last. So for example, if you were learning the Samachvot, which is a hemshech that's 550 pages long and finishes, one of the few hemshech that the Rebbe should say, no, that size, that finish. The questions that he asks on the bottom of page Gimel are answered throughout the Hemshech. The questions that he asks on the body of page Gimel are answered, let's say, on page Tavkuf Lamed Zayin. The questions that he asks on page Aleph and Beis are answered on page Tavkuf Mem Gimel. He answers every question. The Samach Vav is an example of a Hemshech that finishes. Everything he starts, he finishes. And it's remarkable to see the Rebbe Rashab's organization. You see how his head works. He doesn't forget anything. He doesn't overlook any details. Questions that he asks hundreds of pages ago, which means from a technical perspective, 2.5 years before or 3 years before when he started the Hemshech, he answers every single question. And it's always in reverse order. What he asks first gets answered last. What he asks second to the first is answered second to the last, and so on. So when you learn the Hemshech, there is this phenomenon of loose ends. You ask questions, and there are no answers, and it's bleibstecken. Then you gotta go on to something else. You ask questions, you have no answers, it's bleibstecken, and it drives you crazy. But that's the way a Hemshech goes. The big problem is that the majority of Hemshechim of this size, of the Rebbe Rashab were never completed. The Rebbe started and didn't finish. Why the Rebbe would start something and not finish it is beyond me. There are not, as you'll see in Mitzvah Hashem as we finish the Hemshech, it looks to be almost finished. It's not completely finished, because there are still questions unanswered, but the Rebbe, he answers all the questions till, let's say, top of page base. But the questions on the very top of page base, and the questions on page Aleph, remain unanswered. The Chevra downstairs are learning Samach Tes. None of the questions are answered. And the question at the beginning of it, he never gets back to the Shana Bechlal, he goes off onto this tangent, and that Hemshech is longer than ours. That Hemshech is almost 130 pages long, and it doesn't end at all. The Etes, he talks, there's a Siyam HaDroshi, the Rebbe Rashab wrote a conclusion of the Hemshech, and he also doesn't answer all the questions. The two large Hemsheichim that have a finish are the Samach Vav and the Hemshech Rosh Hashanah Samach Hei. And when you see how a Hemshech looks, when it's finished, you say, wow. Because you see the clarity, that Rebbe Rashab's head was extremely clear. He takes you on all of these twists and turns, but he unravels everything. Every mess he starts, he finishes. But with Nesibis, and I'm sure the Ruchni is the Gesib, it's not just technical, you know, he ran out of time, or he forgot what he wanted to say, Rahman al-Tzlan. There's Ruchni is the reasons why Hemsheichim don't finish. And, you know, if I be a Rebbe, I know these things. But from the few examples of a Hemshech that finishes, you can understand how beautiful a Hemshech would be if it would be completed. I mean, I can give you lists of frustrations. I mean, the Ayin Beis, everybody knows about the Ayin Beis. Ayin Beis is Sikra Racham Lord. It's nowhere near the end. If you've learned it from the beginning and you've kept track of all the questions that the Rebbe started and didn't finish, you imagine the Ayin Beis could literally be twice as long as this. Or time and a half. It's unfinished. Now, so is there no point in learning it? Of course there's a point in learning it, because many of the subjects are finished. Many of the discussions he starts and completes, even though he didn't go full circle, he didn't mamish finish all the stuff that he started. Another interesting thing you find about a Hemshech, some of that at least, not all of them, is that a Hemshech could be 100 pages long, and you'll find someplace else, a Maimer, that can be 4, 5, 6 pages, where the entire Hemshech is summarized. In other words, it's not uncommon for the Rebbe to take one Maimer, the Rebbe Rashab take one Maimer, either from his father, from the Rebbe Marash, or from his Zayde, from the Rebbe Tzemach Tzedek, and to stretch it, and stretch it, and stretch it, and one single Maimer can become a whole Hemshech. A classic example of that is the Hemshech Etter, which is a Maimer someplace near Atel. Or last year I showed it to you, the Vavaya Pocket and the Sada, which we have about, what do we have, 40 some pages. So there's a Maimed and a Nunches, which is 4.5 Amudim, which is the whole Maimed. So it's not uncommon for what a Hemshech to be found someplace else in a far more abbreviated version. And there are many, many examples for this. The mile of that, of course, is you learn a Hemshech, and Hemshech doesn't finish. You can look someplace else. Someplace else you'll find the answers to your questions. So when you learn a Hemshech like Ranat, and you learn the first page, so if I wouldn't tell it to you, you'd be waiting for the answers. So I'm telling you, the questions that are asked on page Aleph are never answered. It doesn't mean there are no answers. The answers are found in different Maimonides. But in the Ranat, the Rebbe did not finish the Hemshech. So what I like to do when I learn these Maimonides, and we read pieces of Maimed that are incomplete, that are unfinished, I'm going to tell you the answers. In other words, we're going to learn our page Aleph, and I'm going to tell you the answers as they're found in other Maimarim. The reason I'm doing this is because our Hemshech doesn't go full circle. He doesn't mamish come all the way back and address the questions that he asks on page Aleph. And by the way, to just make it clear to you, I don't know if you've been appreciating this, you have three sets of questions here. Page Aleph till 7 lines from the bottom is one set of questions. Then from there till the top of page Beis, 4 lines in the top, is a second set of questions. And then page Beis is a third set of questions, and then to some extent the Hemshech begins, as we'll talk Mitzvah in the next year. So you have three sets of questions. The third set of questions, the questions on page Beis, are answered. But the questions on page Aleph, and then the bottom of Aleph, the top of page, remain, as far as I know, as far as I can tell, unanswered. Okay? So I want to begin now. If somebody has a comment or a question, by all means, speak. So let's talk. Limit on him, okay? Yom Tov Shel Rosh Hashanah Shechaliyah V'Shabbos. When Yom Tov of Rosh Hashanah, in other words, Rosh Hashanah falls on Shabbos, and of course that's the way it is this year, Tavshin Samach Gimel Mitzvah Hashem, Rosh Hashanah is Shabbos. And I want everybody to know, B'derech Muzgir, that the Rabbeim were very happy when Rosh Hashanah was Shabbos. They liked that. And the Rebbe would call it a Shabbos Dikayor. When the year falls on Shabbos, he would call it a Shabbos Dikah year. Why did the Rebbeim like when Rosh Hashanah was Shabbos? Obviously, I don't know. But one of the svaras, one of the things that we sort of know, is that when Rosh Hashanah is Shabbos, the Rebbe doesn't have to blow shofar. And when you blow shofar and I blow shofar, it's blowing shofar. When the Rebbe blows shofar, he's carrying the load of the world on his shoulders, the purpose of the creation. And when Rosh Hashanah is Shabbos, the Ebisha takes care of business alone. Ah, you have to blow shofar the second day Rosh Hashanah, but it says in Kabbalah Sfarim that there's a very, very big difference between the Rosh Hashanah shofar of the first day and the Rosh Hashanah shofar of the second day. And the first day Rosh Hashanah is called Dina Kasha, severe judgment. In the second day Rosh Hashanah is called Dina Rafia, softer judgment. When Rosh Hashanah was Shabbos, and Rosh Hashanah can only be the first day Shabbos. Second day Rosh Hashanah cannot be Shabbos. Leah Durosh. So when Rosh Hashanah is Shabbos, it's always the first day that Rabbeim were always happy. This way, the inyan of Shefer was accomplished. The Ebisha took care of business himself. And there's a little bit of a sipur that illustrates this. Taka, 100 years ago this year, Tafresh Tamar Gimel, Bediuk, the Rebbe Rashab made a shino in his minhagim. The minig by the Rabbeim was, as some of you probably know, that the Rabbeim themselves were masada the tekiyas. They didn't necessarily all blow Shefer. Some did, some didn't. The Friedrich Rebbe, I don't believe, blew Shefer. The Rebbe blew Shefer most of the years. But they were masada the tekiyas. That means to say they would say the psukim before, and it could be they would make the bracha, and somebody else would blow. And there was a whole seder of achana the tekiyas, you know, there was a whole ceremony how this all happened. One of the parts of this ceremony was to be masada the Shefers, to set up the Shefers. And there's a sikha in Tafshin Hei. We described the diok, the seder of how the shefers were laid out. There was a big white kerchief and a smaller red kerchief, and I believe the Fidikib writes that the Rebbe Rashab, when his hands were quick and they didn't tremble, he would lay down the white kerchief and make a small bend in the corner. Later, when his hands were shaking and he was afraid that people would notice, he stopped doing it. He didn't want people to see what he was doing. But the Fidikib said his father would lay out the big white kerchief and put down a red one. And inside the shefer, he would put three shefers in a certain formation. Then they would fold the red, and the white completely enveloped the red, like keplach. You know, the outside covers over the inside. Then they would turn it over, and they would press. I saw the Rebbe do it. Press down. This was preparing the shefers. So, and there's all kinds of kavanas. I don't know what the meaning of it is, but there's a kind of kavanas and kavala. What significance of this is? So the Rebbe Rashab, like all the Rebbe, used to prepare the shefers. By stories before Rosh Hashanah, Samach Gimel. The Rebbe Rashab had a dream. And in his dream, he was told, Mumayla, who told him, I don't know, why do you have to give the Yetzirah notice, or the Samachmem notice, or certain notice that you're going to Lo Shefer? So from that point forward, the Rebbeim started a new Seder, and this year, it'll be 100 years to Diyuk, Samach Gimel, that when they were Masada the Shefers, they would put a talis over the head. So you couldn't see how they were Masada the Shefers. This is by this Membam Rebbe. After the Rebbe would do the, you know, the Lamatzeach, or perhaps before, he would throw the talis over his head, and you didn't see the Rebbe preparing the shefers. He would pick up his talis, and you saw there was a package. This was the shefers. But the second day Rosh Hashanah, they didn't do it. The second day Rosh Hashanah, the Rebbe would allow people to see how he was masada the shefers. And Bam Rebbe Derech Agav, this is a very interesting aside. The Rebbe was masada the shefers more or less like I just described. I mean, you know, there are people who can make things more complicated than involved, but that's basically what it was. It was a big white one and a smaller red one. The Rebbe had a kerchief that was, this is from the Rebbe Marash. And it wasn't mamish solid red. It was a design that had red flowers on it. And the first time I saw that kerchief, which was Mestamet Tavshin Membeis, I mean, I saw it many times before, but the first time I knew to look at it, it was whole. Within a few years, that kerchief was strings. It was shreds, mamish. There was nothing left of it. I remember that ever picking it up like a rag and just dumping it in. It was torn to shreds. And a very interesting detail that I noticed, I don't know if many people noticed, was that I remember very clearly that the Rosh Hashanah, the Rebbe had this kerchief, and when the Rebbe came in the Ila, in Kippur, the Rebbe got Mafter Yoyne. Now you know what Mafter Yoyne is, right? I remember very distinctly how the Rebbe looked down, he pulled out of his pocket that same red kerchief, a drop. And the Pshas Mafter, the Rebbe said, Mafter Yoyne, that red kerchief was sticking out of his pocket. Again, I don't know how many people noticed, but I saw this Vada, he's a Minshkin Suffolk, that the same kerchief that he would put down by the Tekiyah is the red one. That's supposed to be covered with the white. You understand, right? White goes on Nachmim, and the red goes on the Mid-Avedis and so on. That's why you cover it over. That same kerchief the Rebbe would pull out of his pocket, mamish, a tad, a tiny drop. But I remember distinctly, a few years, I saw the Rebbe do this before. He started the Maftir, and he looked down like this. and it was just sitting right there. He was sitting in his pocket, it was poking out of his satukyus, a drop, or whatever it was, a kittel. But the thing that I wanted to add was that the second day Rosh Hashanah, the Rebbe, in this same package with the shayfas, he would put in the white shawl. And the Rebbe would always wear the second day Rosh Hashanah, the Rebbe would put on a new shawl. How do you say a shawl? A shawl means a scarf. Because of the Shechiyanu, it's a shalaf and abrach on the Shechiyanu. When Rosh Hashanah is Shabbos, there's no shayla, because there's no first day Rosh Hashanah. But otherwise, there's the Rebbe would, in that package, put in the shawl, and then afterwards you could watch the Rebbe, he'd put it in like this. The only time he wore that shalik was Tamu was to Musaf Rosh Hashanah. I don't think he ever put it on again. But the Rebbe used to buy him always a white shalik, and this is what the Rebbe used to put on for his Shechiyanu. When, again, when Rosh Hashanah is Shabbos, you don't have that problem, because the second day the Shechiyanu is not a suffix. But in any event, so the difference is between the first day Rosh Hashanah and the second day Rosh Hashanah. The first day Rosh Hashanah is called Dina Kasha, it's a harder judgment. And the second day Rosh Hashanah is called Dina Rafi, it's a softer judgment. And that's why when Rosh Hashanah was Shabbos, people that know the secrets were always very, very happy. But anyways, but here we're not talking about secrets. Here we're reading Pashat Nigel Teda, the Halacha, the Lomdus. It says in the Mishnah in Rosh Hashanah that Rosh Hashanah Shalom Shcholi is B'Shabbos. B'Mikdash have you taken? They blew Shaifa the Beis HaMikdash. Avalei B'Medina, they didn't blow Shaifa in the Medina. Opirish Rashi, and Rashi says, Lebi Yerushalayim, Velei Begvul. They didn't blow Shaifa, not in the Beis HaMikdash, not in the city of Yerushalayim, nor Begvul, nor outside Yerushalayim, right? What about Lulav? When Lulav is on Shabbos, what do you do? Huh? I think that in Yerushalayim they did shake lulav. I'm not sure, but I believe that in Yerushalayim they shake lulav. Lefa cooked on anything. Don't write it down. Take a look. But Shefa, they only blew in the Beis HaMikdash. They didn't even blow it in Yerushalayim. And the Rebbe Tamal Demand in the Fabrengin, that it's brought down, that in the Beis HaMedrash Shel Harif, had been givlaz and Shefa Shabbos. In the Beis Medrash where the Rif was Rav, in Fez, in Morocco, they used to blow Shefa on Shabbos. And the Rebbe many times was speculating that perhaps the Rif was Machkadash Achedish Al Pir Eir, that he went back to creating a new month based on the sightings of the moon. In other words, not on the calendar of Hilul, because he considered himself a Bezim Kavua. There's a Gantz Alumdus about this, where there's a lot of be outside of Eretz Yisrael. He didn't live in it, he lived in Morocco. But he blew Shefer Hashan Shabbos, because his Bezim was considered like a Bezim Kavua, a very important Bezim. But Stama that you don't blow Shefer except Rosh Hashanah, in Tefna Beis HaMikdash. Oh, my father is Rigmar Atam. The reason you don't blow Shefer Hashanah, which is Shabbos Darabonon, or the Gozer Bey, it's a Gzeda Darabonon. What the Gzeda Darabonon, Kidderabba, like Rabbi says, Dom, Rabbi says, Hakel Chayav Mitkiya Shefer, everybody is Chayav to blow Shefer. Vein Hakel, Bekiya Mitkiya Shefer, and not everybody is expert how to blow Shefer. So Gzeda, we're afraid, Shema Yitlan Abiyadi, perhaps a person who wants to know how to blow Shefer, he doesn't know what to blow or how to blow and so on, he will carry the shayf of Yelich, Eitla Bagi Lilme, he'll go to an expert to teach him how to blow shayfir, V'yaviren, U'dal, Damat V'shasarab, and he'll push it carry, and that's a very serious aveda, could even be a deraisa carrying, and therefore we're afraid that some person who doesn't know how to blow shayfir is going to wake up at Hashan in the morning and say, hey, maybe I should learn how to blow shayfir, he's going to go to the Chacham, he's going to carry the shayfir, and therefore nobody blows shayfir. Now let me make a couple of points clear. Rabba was an Amoya. The Mishnah was written before Rabba, yeah? This is called Gzeira de Rabba. This is a very famous Gzeira de Rabba. You have a lot of places in Shas, the Rabba Fashid and Ezach. Gzeira de Rabba. But the Pashtus, Gzeira de Rabba doesn't mean that before Rabba there wasn't the Gzeira. Moreover, it's the Pashtus that Rabba wasn't even the one who was Megala the Tam for the Gzeira. But on the Gemara, he's the source of it. In other words, Mistame, Rabba had a Kabbalah from his Rebbe. Who had a Kabbalah from his Rebbe, the reason you don't blow Shefer Shabbos is because you're afraid you're going to carry. What? It may have been a lot earlier than the Yechon HaMezake. It could have been the Yechon HaKohen Gadol, for example. And I don't know when the Takana was made, but it was certainly made time of Bayis Sheni. Right? The Rabbah was well after the Chod. Yeah? So even though we attribute this Svara, the Tam, it's called Gzeira the Rabbah, well before Rabbah, the Gzeira was B'Metzias. The Yalal of Moshe for Shabbos outside the base of Mikdash, or outside of Bezim Kavua. And Mistama, the reason was known also. Now it's an interesting thing that one of the Rishimahs Rebbe brings down, that the Alter Rebbe brings the Shechon Baruch a different reason altogether. And that is Uvdin Dechel. Right over here it says the reason that you don't blow Shefer Shabbos because you're afraid you're going to carry. It's a Gzeda. The Alter Rebbe mentions another possible hesbed for why you don't blow Shefer when Rosh Hashanah is Shabbos, because it's Uvdin, it's considered a weekday kind of an activity. It's not considered, it's like sort of a certain level of Muktzah sort of. It's like something, it's not Shabbos day. And it's Uvdin Dechel, which is another sort of that the Alter Rebbe brings, which I don't think is brought from earlier, for why we don't blow Shefer Shabbos. But these are hezbeirim abin nigla, right? In nigla de teira, in halacha, you don't blow shofar Shabbos, you're afraid you're going to carry, or the Rebbe has under the chayil, and the Rebbe says, I don't understand. This is really, really odd. It's very wondrous, very strange. The Chachamim came along, and they were mevatel amid sesedei reisa, right? And they did the same thing by lulav. Menateri is supposed to shake the lulav 7 days, which includes Shabbos. And the Chachamim came along and said, no, even though it says in the Teri you're supposed to shake a lulav on Shabbos, you're not allowed to take lulav on Shabbos. Like this year, the first day Sukkot is Shabbos, there's no lulav. Yeah, why? The Chachamim were eker adav menateri. The Chachamim came along and said, even though it says in Chumash you should blow shofar, we say you shouldn't blow shofar. Even though it says in Chumash you should shake a lulav, we say you shouldn't shake the lulav. How the Chachamim deichem says deiraisa, b'shvil chash out of a concern shle lov, that he said that you shouldn't come to the aveda of carrying. V'chi mishum chash olavad, since when is it reasonable that out of a chash, out of a concern that perhaps some kavadas will carry, yidach mitzvah says deiraisa, we should push off a mitzvah deiraisa. Because the whole idea of the Chachamim coming along and pushing away, deiraisa is a funny concept. And especially since the Torah says Moshe Shafer, so because some fool may make a mistake. I mean, a Yidvas Ken Lenin is not going to do it, yeah? Who's going to make the mistake? Someone who's an Amharitz, who didn't think about Shafer before. Rosh Hashanah in the morning, oh, I have to blow Shafer, I don't know how. I mean, how many people is that going to happen to? What's the likelihood? Yeah? And because of this, nobody blows Shafer Shabbos. And by the way, to enhance the question, the Rebbe has a different Sikh. Kind of Sikh Mandem, which is printed in the Agada and Lukut HaSichas. But the Rebbe asks the best question of all. I don't understand. Rosh Hashanah Shabbos, you don't blow shofar, you're afraid someone's going to carry. Sukkot Shabbos, you don't shake the lulav, you're afraid someone's going to carry. Yeah, what about with Pesach Shabbos? A guy has to make 3 matzahs and dalat cases, and there's 6 minim, and there's 15 simonim of the Seder Shal Pesach. Are you befeidish, prava Seder Shabbos? A minute. Can we talk about the Zalba Eitzef HaShefer Eichet? No? Number one. Ufaket! Shofar is not done privately. Shofar is done in shul. Shofar is done by one person for everybody. So the question is, no, to hear. The question is, mitamor kum to Pesach, which is far more complicated than blowing shofar, and it's certainly more complicated than shaking a lulav. Mitamor, there's no credit to have it. No one's worried about it. And the Rabbi has a sicha, we ask this question. If we're so worried about perhaps someone, some amharitz, is not going to know that halachas is going to carry, it's a koshke mekav v'chemer. Ma'adach shofar, which is a far easier thing, and lulav, which is even easier than shofar, we're concerned that someone's not going to know he's going to carry. How come when it comes to Pesach we're not concerned? And of course the answer is going to be, as I'll explain to you soon, that the answer that I brought here only answers l'pi nigla. The ikar answers are answers l'pi pnimius hanyanim, and the pnimius hanyanim, when shofar, when Rosh Hashanah is Shabbos, you don't need shofar. When Sukkot is Shabbos, you don't need lulav. When Pesach is Shabbos, you still need matzah. That's the real reason. In other words, it's not because of the gzeda. The gzeda is the nigladika reason. The pnimizdika reason is because on Shabbos, it takes care of Rosh Hashanah Shefer. It takes care of Sukkot Lulav, but it doesn't take care of Pesach Seder. If you want to take a look, it's not such a long sikha, look it up. So the Rebbe says, how could you push away a mitzvah deiraisa because of chashash derabbanan? Or befrat? The question is enhanced further. That we say, mitzvah tkiyah shofar, the mitzvah tkiyah shofar, she mitzvah ramah v'nasam eid, it's a mitzvah which is very elevated, very exalted, very high. And it's higher than other mitzvahs. Okay, do abapnimiyah sakavana, the mitzvah tkiyah shofar, everybody knows. And there's a deeper significance to the mitzvah blowing shofar, and what is that? Chuvinyan atchuv, which is the idea of chuv. Oh, mitzvah tshuva, the mitzvah of tshuva, he lamayla, mayla mikala mitzvahs, is higher than the rest of the mitzvahs. All the mitzvahs are on one level and tshuva is on a higher level. Okay, let me give you the technical speak. Mitzvahs are called mitzvahs havaye. Mitzvahs Hashem. It's the pasuk, right? Uri'isa me'isa v'schatem is called mitzvahs havaye. A few words later it says it's called mitzvah isai, with another discussion. Mitzvahs havaye in Kabbalah means that the mitzvahs are in Zod Atzilus, in Adam Ha'elyon. Like everybody knows, the Eibishter has a koyachal, a supernal guf, ramach evonim, in yamach evonim, the malka. Each mitzvah corresponds to one of the limbs of the Eibishter's guf. When it comes to tshuva, you had it in the Maimon of Vidya Tshuva, Derech Mekasecha, for the Ramban brings down that the source of the mitzvah of tshuva in Torah is the pasuk taki in this week's Parsha, in Nitzavim, ki ha-mitzvah hazeis, asher anoichi mitzavcha hayoyim, כי המצווה הזה, זה שהניחם צו חיים לנפלסים וחוב לנחי, כי אלי בשמיים, כי כל הבדלך דוב מייד, so the Ramban says that mitzvah azeh goes on tshuva. Other days have different opinions, but the Ramban says that mitzvah goes on tshuva. So chassidus, they make a big shturim out of this. They say like this: most mitzvahs come from avaya, tshuva comes from anoichi. Right? Most mitzvahs are called mitzvahs Hashem. Tshuva says ki mitzvah azeh asher anoichi mitzvah chayim, and anoichi is higher than avaya. Anoichi is in kesed. Anoichi is higher than atzilus. So mitzvahs are in zah, ruba deruba, mitzvah in zah, atzilus. Tshuva is higher than all the mitzvahs. And this explains why we continue now inside. At the proof that tshuva is higher than the other mitzvahs, shegam in pogim chas v'shalom, but kiyam ateiru mitzvah. The person made a blemish in kiyam ateiru mitzvahs, yeah? And there are two basic types of blemishes. Does anybody know quickly what are the two basic types of blemishes? Huh? Very good. The first type of blemish is you did naveda. The second type of blemish is you fail to do a mitzvah, so you learned it in the Gersa Tshuva Perek Aleph and in other places, that in a certain respect the mitzvah Leisa says worse than the mitzvah Saseh. The tshuva of mitzvah Leisa says stronger, right? What does it say in the Gemara? Oh, the mitzvah Saseh Vishav, and Yizaz Misham, Achim Echonli. You do a mitzvah, you over a mitzvah Saseh, you get the tshuva help right away. Oh, the mitzvah Leisa says Vishav, tshuva Tela, Vyem Kippurim Achapet. That the mitzvah Leisa says requires a stronger kapot, you have to wait till Yom Kippur. But on the other hand, not doing the mitzvah Saseh is a lot worse than doing the mitzvah Leisa. Why? If you did not avedi, you could fix it. If you didn't do a mitzvah, how are you going to miss? How are you gonna, if you didn't say Kishma yesterday, God forbid, how are you going to fix that? Yesterday's gone, yesterday's Kishma is gone. So even though Le'in Kapara, a mitzvah Leisa says worse than a mitzvah Saseh, but Legabe, the idea that you lost the opportunity to do a mitzvah Saseh is much worse. And the Gemara calls it Mu'uvah Shalichah Mesakin, right? Zesh Le'kara Kishma Shachas Yadis, Arvah Shachas. One of the examples of Avedis that you cannot fix is Chilul Hashem. Zeshabal Erbehilat Mamzer. Why can't you fix Chilul Hashem? Because the Mamzer, the Reitzach, you can do tshuva all you want, the Avedis walking around. And the other example is if you fail to a mitzvah Saseh. If you fail to a mitzvah Saseh, how can you do tshuva for that? Tshuva means to correct. It's gone. The time is gone, the opportunity is gone, and so on. Tshuva heals. Tshuva heals. There's a lot of madregas in tshuva. But the highest madrega of tshuva can even correct the mitzvah Saseh. Not only can it correct the mitzvah Saseh, and even a Chilul Hashem, it can even correct the mitzvah Saseh. So tshuva is extremely powerful. It's higher than mitzvahs. Why? Because in the level of mitzvahs, you did an aveda. It's an aveda. You didn't do a mitzvah. It's lost. Tshuva is higher than teiru mitzvahs. It doesn't come from mitzvahs havaya. It comes from the level of anoichi. And because it comes from the level of anoichi, tshuva is helpful, and tshuva is even helpful retroactively. Even if a person made a blemish in the fulfillment of teiru mitzvahs, there's nothing that stands in the way of tshuva. The person's aveda is wiped away. And by the way, in addition to slicha, there's also kapara. Right? Slicha means Hashem shouldn't be angry at you. Kapara means that he didn't sin. It's a little different. Hashem shouldn't be angry at you. And kapara means he wipes away the aveda as if the aveda never happened. So tshuva is very powerful. Right? Mitzvah sa tshuva, ki l'mayla mikol ha-mitzvahs. Tshuva is above all the other mitzvahs. V'zeo gam kin inyin tkiya shefer. That's one of the many ideas in shefer. Shefer has three, and Yoram is explaining to you in a moment. V'chein. Another thing that sets Shefer apart from the rest of the mitzvahs is that kol ha'am shachas al kolos hashana, all the energy we bring out into the world for the whole year, hein ha'am shachas ruchnias dikiyam ha'teiru mitzvahs, both spiritual ha'am shachas of teiru mitzvahs, v'hein ha'am shachas gashmias as well as physical ha'am shachas, v'china shefa ha'chayis be'elamis, what happens a whole year, ha'kel nimshach ha'idei tkiya Shefer. Rosh Hashanah we're judged, right? Adesh teit in shulchan aruch, Rosh Hashanah is Yom Adin. And the Rebbe has it in the Sichas also, we're judged not only for Gashmias, we're judged also for Ruchnias. It says in Agos, Magnus, the Rebbe's in the Sichas, that the Ikke Mishpat Rosh Hashanah is for Gashmias. But it's also for Ruchnias. A Yid is judged, Rosh Hashanah, what kind of year he's going to have Saiba Gashmias, and even Ruchnias. Ay, Bechira Chofshis, Tana Teretzit. It all happened Rosh Hashanah, and it's all affected by the Shefer. Ki Yedua Me'azeh, Ve'ki Sfer Yisla, it's explained in Kabbalah. Ve'im Kein, if you consider the significance of Shefer, it's a mitzvah, it's tshuva, and it's an inyan klali, eich dochu, eich yitchu, tamur me'ed, it's very strange, eich yitchu mitzvah kizu, mishum chshash alavad, why would they prevent us? For doing a mitzvah because of a chshash terabona, and someone's going to care.
That's essentially the question. Now, the Rebbe has a shtickle pilpul about zichrin truah. Okay, it is a chalein up matanim with them zichrin truah. This is a famous Yerushalmi. It's not a famous Yerushalmi. It's a controversial Yerushalmi that perhaps been upteled after the Shabbos and Shefer Shabbos of the Paschal. This is a just your own. This is the question. How could it be that you don't blow Shefer Shabbos because of Chashter Rabban? Now, first of all, yes, sir. One more time. Yeah, we're going to Samayan. Learn it again. Mami Yudayan. Ovaitas. The dry days. He brings it all down. Yeah, but take a look again. He explains it. There's 3 days there in the Gemara, right? B'chol Yeh, B'chol Shah. So he explains that it's different Madrigas in judgment. But the Iki judgment is Rosh Hashanah. Now, number one, I want to share with you this thought. The Rebbe has Sikhis. Famous Sikhis. And the Kutta Sikhis Chalak Dal, Rosh Hashanah. And it's also in a Maimer, which is Mugin, Melukat Chelek Hei, Yif Chalos Nachasem. Where the Rebbe explains to us that the Shoshana, the Shefer has 3 levels. When you blow Shefer and Shoshana, you're doing 3 things on 3 different levels at once. The lowest accomplishment of Shefer and Shoshana is a mitzvah. The second accomplishment of Shefer and Shoshana is tshuva. The third accomplishment of Shefer and Shoshana is making the Eivishter Melech. And when you blow Shefer Shabbos, Rosh Hashanah, you automatically, number one, make him a king, number two, accomplish an union of tshuva, and number three, do a mitzvah. And essentially, the Rebbe talks here only about the first two, he doesn't mention the third. He talks about the mitzvah of Rosh Hashanah, and he talks about the idea of Rosh Hashanah being an union of tshuva, but the third union of Rosh Hashanah is not brought here in the Maimon, but it's brought in a lot of other places in Chassidus. Okay, now, so by the way, I suggest that you learn the Sikh and Chelet Dal, it's a Gishmak HaSikh. I told you that I would give you answers to these questions. Well, what's that I might say? Shoshana Shabbos. Some guy, we're afraid that some Kal Shabakalim, Kali Adas, Chusi Ere, I said Lashon in some of all, is going to forget and carry Shefer Shabbos. It doesn't make sense. It's not fair. Let me give you a story first. And the story that I'm going to share with you is Nishis Tama Maisa. It's very, very important that we should keep this in mind as we learn Chassidus, especially the Rebbe's Chassidus. So Givez Nayid, who passed away Mamash in the last 2-3 years, at Gehesen Reb Itzkel. Reb Itzkel lived in Bar Park. He was the brother of the Racham Sifke Rebbe, who was in Yerushalayim. The Racham Sifke Rebbe is the father of Rabbi Tversky, who is here in Crown Heights. Racham Sifke Rebbe. The Chernobyla, the Inklech from the Chernobyla, they have a Shaychas to Chabad. As you know, the Mitzvah Rebbe's daughter married the Chernobyla. So they have a Shaychas to us. They're related, actually. The Rebbeim were related to this Racham Sifke Mishpacha. This Reb Itzkel got married in 1952-53, Yerbezi Gimel. And he came here from Eretz Yisrael with his father. The father's on Gehesen of Yechanan, Rechem Sifke. Was I Fatah on Gehesen, Reb David, Rechem Sifke. If anybody wants to read about them, I mean, Lubavitchers don't know anything about anybody except their own. The Sefer Shem Esos Mechavirecha from Volpe, he writes about them, Tversky, other tests. It's very interesting. They had a very special relationship with the Rebbe and with the Friedrich Rebbe. So when they came here to America, Reb Yechanan and Rechem Sifke took his son to Rebbe, to the Rebbe's office. The Rebbe was then young, and he looked even younger. But he was the Rebbe. And this Rebbe Yechanan brought his son to the Rebbe before the Chasne, and so on. Rabbi Groner would always make a mention that there was an old tradition by Daily Yisrael that when a guest came to town and he would go and visit the local Gedolim, they would come visit him in his hotel. They would exchange visits. When the Friedrich Rebbe was not Yisrael, so he visited the Gedolim Yisrael, he visited different people, including some controversial figures. He visited Rabbi Cook, Menach. And after he visited them, they came to visit the Friedrich Rebbe. This was a tradition by Gedolei Yisrael that they would exchange visits. In all the years of the Rebbe's Nesiyas, he did it once. That somebody should visit him and he should come visit them. And the Rachsani, he did it only once. This was for the Rebbe Yechanan and Tversky, Rebbe Yechanan and Racham Srifke. But aside from that, he never did it. In other words, Rebbe Temeyakir Gebez. When this young man came to the Rebbe Yechidus, before his Chasana, Mestame Kimin Haga Skver, he was probably 16 or 17 years old. So the Rebbe asks him what he's learning. So he tells the Rebbe that he's learning 2 different Masechtas, and he's learning one with Azim Tachabrusa and another learning Teralein. So the Rebbe says to him, and he tells the Rebbe which Masechtas, and it says also in the story what he was learning. So the Rebbe says to him, which Masechtas do you want to talk in learning? So he tells the Rebbe which he's more comfortable with than learning. So the Rebbe starts to discuss with him the sugya that he's learning in Gemara, and the Rebbe asks him a question. The first question the Rebbe asks him was a Balabatish question. It's a question that all the Mefarshim ask, and he answers the question. So then the Rebbe asks him a second question. A question that was based on his answer. He gave the Rebbe an answer from one of the Mefarshim. The second question he was stumped, he couldn't answer. So the Rebbe tells him, this second question does not have an answer in Nigla. It only has an answer in Nistin, Pnimis HaTorah. And the Rebbe explains to him that it's not only the Pshat, that Torah has a lot of levels, you know, there's Pshat and Remez, Drush and Seid and so on, but rather that all the levels of Torah are connected. And when you're learning a lower level of Torah, so at that level of Torah, there are always going to be imperfections, right? Any person learns the Gemara. Yeah, how many times do you have in Shas? Kasha? Yeah? The Gemara will finish a Machlokes Kasha, and you know what? Quite often you paskin like that man da Omar that the Gemara concluded Kasha. If the Gemara concluded Tufta, they don't paskin like him. But if the Gemara concludes Kasha, quite often they paskin like that day on which the Kasha was. Why? Because there's more to Tater than we know and meet the eye. But they're coming Yonim, the Rebbe says, that in Nigla Tater have no Hezbollah. But when you go up to a higher level of Tater, they have an answer. And really, the way you go from a lower level of Tater to the higher level of Tater is when the lower level of Tater you have questions that don't have answers. These questions are the keys that open up the doors that lead you from the lower level of Teda to the higher levels of Teda, and at the higher levels of Teda you have answers. But then in the higher levels of Teda there's going to be new questions that also don't have answers. So you have, those are keys to doors that open you up to an even higher level of Teda. And Teda Darucha Meretz Mida. I grabbed a saw, and by the way, it's worth looking up. In the Maimara Maktarev and Altner Rebbe, I had a reason to look it up, a Maimir, where the Altner Rebbe, speaking about the Vavus Tavar, the Baal Shem Tov used to say, that on every question I could give an answer, and every answer I could give a question. It's a bottom Baal Shem Tov, so the Rebbe explains it, that Torah has many levels, and Torah is infinite. Each individual level of Torah has a medida of Agbola, has limits, and there are always going to be questions that cannot be answered on a particular level of Torah. So then you go to the higher level of Torah, and then you have answers. But then that new level of Torah, you have new questions, and it's higher and higher and higher, how it gets rather than so. The Rebbe tells this young man, this Ibitzikl, that this question I just answered you cannot be answered in Nigla. You have to go up to a higher level, to go up to the level of Chassidus. Klapi, what am I saying this? It's important to appreciate this Eidukai, because it's, I think it's one of the Sages de Kenyonim and Chassidus. Everybody knows Teda has many levels. There's Nigla Teda, there's Drush, there's Remez, and there's Kabbalah. Chassidim, Chabad Chassidim, learn Chassidus. And when we learn Chassidus, we also taste a lot of Enyonim of Pnimis HaTeda of Kabbalah, parts of Teda that other Yidden don't learn or know about, and so on. One of the things that's very important to the Rebbe, our Rebbe, lav davka to the other Rebbe, so much. And the one who really started this was the Tzemach Tzedek, was to show that Torah is one. It's not enough that you learn Nigla, you learn Nistar. You have to see how Nigla brings you to Nistar. How Nigla without Nistar is not complete. It's one Torah. And that there, when the Rebbe explains in Inyan Chassidus, he always starts with Inyan and Nigla. And he shows you how in Nigla this Pashat not an adequate Hezber without going up to the level of Chassidus. This is a Mishnah. It's telling us a halacha in Nigla, the Teretz, Negev, Pe'al Mamish. This halacha is brought in Shulchan Aruch. This is not an exotic Inyan, it's brought Pashat to Shulchan Aruch. The Rebbe wants to explain to you Rosh Hashanah al-Pi Chassidus. But he doesn't start with Chassidus. He starts with Nigla. And he demonstrates to you how Nigla with Chassidus is not whole. This Hezber that the Rebbe brought here is a Gemara. The Gemara says, why don't you blow a shofar on Hashanah Shabbos? You're afraid you're going to carry. So the Rebbe says, but that doesn't make sense. It's not enough of a reason. And it's a mitzvah of a nasa, and it's tshuva, and it's kabbalas hamalchus, and the judgment of the whole year is dependent upon it. Why? Some kaladas and pachus ha'erech is going to carry, maybe. But when you learn in chassidus why you don't blow shofar on Hashanah Shabbos, vet lichtik. And basically, the nekudas habiyah, the point of the answer is, the reason we don't blow shofar Shabbos, which is Rosh Hashanah, is because on Shabbos, Rosh Hashanah, the shofar is blown by itself. You don't have to blow, it happens by itself. It's not a gzeira de rabbe, and it's not because of obdin d'cheil. Those are the hezbeirim api nigla. Huh? Right. And those are api nigla, they're adequate hezbeirim. But when you say to yourself, l'chaida, this hezbeir is a weak hezbeir, chassidus fills it in. And the same is true in many, many maimonim, and b'chlalan, and the Rebbe's sichas, you should know, one of the Rebbe's pet peeves, is to start off an Indian api nigla, and to show you how nigla by itself is not sufficient. There's always going to be things that remain unresolved, and you have to have chassidus, you have to have pnimiyas hateda to make them perfect, to make them exact. So this introduction that I just gave you is negeh, not just in this maimer, is negeh b'chlau, when you learn chassidus, to appreciate what chassidus wants. It's not enough that you're learning different levels of Torah. It's even important to combine the levels, that one level should bring you to the next level, should bring you to the next level, and so on. Now, I told you that I would give you the answers. This maimer doesn't finish. I would tell you that I'd give you the answers. So I'll try to do this as quickly as I can because the clock is without mercy. Again, I'll try to do this as quickly as I can, but I want to at least briefly tell you the point of the answer to these questions. And b'chol, it's negiah to know what Rosh Hashanah is, right? So we'll talk a little bit about Rosh Hashanah. It says in Chassidus that there's two types of leaders. One category of leader is called a Moshe, and the second category of leader is called a Melech. A Moshe means a ruler, and a Melech means a king. Now, these words are used interchangeably in society. People use the word kings and rulers indiscriminately. But these are concepts in Torah. They're not just phenomena. In reality, Torah talks about a Moshe and a Melech. What's the difference between a Moshe and a Melech? It's very simple. A Moshe is a man who wants to have power. He doesn't necessarily have to be a bad man, but he's a man who wants to lead. Right? In America, they have politicians. Yeah? Politicians don't get into politics, l'shem shamayim. They can tell you anything they want. Politicians get into politics because they want to lead. They want power. Is it bad? It's life, right? The world's not a perfect place. If a person wants to have power, let him have power. But in America, at least, he's for the people and by the people. Every 4 years, there's an election and so on, right? But a Moshe is a man who wants power. Now, how do you get power if you want power? There's a lot of ways. What's the old-fashioned way of getting power if you want power? You come with an army, you brutalize people, you terrorize people, you frighten the daylights out of people, and they say, okay, I'll do whatever you want, just don't kill me. It's called a dictator. It's also a Moshe. In America, we've made it into an art, yeah? Where he comes along, and he appeals to the special interests, and he shows how much he loves everybody, and he cares everybody. A politician